Well, I noticed, for an example, like Dan Sperry comes down front. He sets up his table and he does his smash and stab. And
it's because he has to pee on somebody.
It's Well, that's true. So he has to be closer to the audience. He can't do it from 30 feet. I mean, they can only go so far.
Okay, let's explain this to your listener. Yeah. Because you just said he has to
pee.
It sounds like it's a weakness. When in reality, it's part of Dan Sperry's act to pee on... Well, I do that too.
But I just a little bit.
I do it voluntarily.
But you don't tell anybody.
When you get excited.
But Jeff can pee way further than
I can pee much further than
that. You can pee from this thing.
So you really do have a pissing contest out there.
That's exactly right.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. The Illusionists is a troupe of performers who have been traveling around the globe creating wonder, setting box office records, and bringing stage magic to the masses. They were the fourth highest grossing show on Broadway when they performed in New York City in November 2014, and they continued to perform for sellout crowds from Sydney's Opera House to Jones Hall here in Houston, Texas. They will be concluding the first leg of their tour shortly before taking a break, then traveling to Los Angeles, California to shoot a 2-hour television special. Beyond that, they will then return to New York and continue their tour under contracts for the next few years. The Illusionists consists of Kevin James as the inventor, Jeff Hobson as the trickster, Aaron Crow as the warrior, Adam Trent as the futurist, Andrew Basso as the escapologist, Dan Sperry as the anti-conjurer, and Yuho Jin, the manipulator. These prestidigitators come from all around the world and have a completely different set of skills, talents, and personalities from each other that, when combined, make for a most thoroughly delightful experience. When they recently appeared for a 4-day, 6-run show here in Houston, I met up with a few members of the cast in their hotel before their afternoon rehearsal. I was lucky, too, that I got to visit with a fill-in for Jeff Hobson. Jeff had a prior personal commitment, but got David Williamson to fill in for him for one day only. Also included in this podcast, you will hear Kevin James, Aaron Crow, and Adam Trent. After we wrapped up and we retired to the lobby of the hotel and saw some others from the cast and crew leaving for the theater, I happened to grab a quick chat with Antonio Hoyos, who is the little person who works with Kevin James as Charlie Chaplin. What interesting stories this gentleman has. Well, enough from me. Let's get on with the fun discussions with the Illusionists here on The Magic Word.
Hello, this is Scott Wells for TheMagicWordPodcast.com. And as we kind of move our chairs around and get settled...
That wasn't a chair. And
that wasn't a chair.
Start again.
Take two. Yeah. That was the trickster over there. The jester. We are here with some of the illusionists who are on tour coming through Houston.
The important ones.
That's right. The stars of the show. The guys who could make their time available to come over here.
Did you get the idea, ladies and gentlemen, that this is not going to be a serious interview?
Somewhere along the line, yes. I think he kind of got that idea. And, of course, the voice you just heard over there was Jeff Hobson. Hey there, Jeff.
Hey, Scott.
And we have, hey, Jeff. You going to speak slow like this? Okay, yep. That's going to be good. Aaron Crow is over here then, too. Hey, Aaron.
Hi, good morning.
And glad to have you here. And, of course, Kevin James over to my right.
Howdy.
Howdy. You sound like that you're getting adjusted to Texas with that kind of greeting.
That's right.
Y'all.
Y'all. That's great. Well, and I think we're going to be having Adam Trent join us shortly here as well. I think he's just getting a cup of coffee. Everybody's trying to wake up here this morning. And this, you guys have had 3 nights already. Is that right? Here in Houston?
This will be the fourth night.
You came in on Tuesday at Jones Hall, and it is, what is that, a 4,000-seat theater or something? Do you know?
I have no idea. I don't know.
It's at least three, I think.
It looks huge.
It's quite cavernous. Speaking of which, how does this compare? I mean, I know it's not like Reno, where they have that huge stage.
You know what? This is, I think, we did our previews and rehearsals in Akron, Ohio. At the E.J. Thomas Hall, and this is almost a carbon copy of the place, because when you come in, you can't really, there's no middle aisles, there's only these side aisles, and they can't even be aisles. You really can't get around. You have to come through the doors, into the theater, and immediately into your into your
row. Right.
And it's very difficult for us. And so this one's another one that I think this one's just like that, which I don't like.
It is difficult.
Yeah.
And also,
there's a big moat in front.
I was about to say, there's just, what have you got, like 30 feet or something, you know, from
about
the
that.
Apron there to the first
help.
Row.
No, that doesn't help at all.
No, because you're... entertainment is kind of directly proportional to the distance between
luckily,
the audiences.
Luckily, we've got that camera and
right.
eye magnification thing going on, so the screens everyone can see,
mm-hmm.
but you can't see the real thing. You can see it on via screen. So,
well, I noticed, for an example, like Dan Sperry comes down front. He sets up his table and he does his smash and stab. And
it's because he has to pee on somebody.
It's, oh, well, that's true. So he has to be closer to the audience. He can't do it from 30 feet. I mean,
yeah.
they can only go so far.
Okay, let's explain this to your listener
yeah.
because you just said he has
to pee.
It sounds like it's a weakness. When in reality, it's part of Dan Sperry's act to pee on... Well, I do that too.
Well,
but
maybe just a little bit.
I do it voluntarily.
But you don't tell anybody.
But when you get excited.
Jeff can pee way further than
yes, that. I can pee much further
you
than
can
that.
You can pee either from the stage.
So you really do have a pissing contest out there.
That's exactly right.
Mine's longer than yours.
Guess who we have, who just joined us.
Hey there, Adam. Glad to meet you.
Hello.
Thank you very much for coming and joining us
Thank you.
Here as well. So just waking up and getting adjusted here
for
this
hours.
Morning.
Hours.
Okay. Now, you guys have been on the road and traveling, and you're kind of bringing this tour, so to speak, to an end, I guess, just in about a month or two. Here we are sitting here on June the 5th.
First leg
of yeah. this. Now, how many, and when did you get started with this leg of the journey?
On Broadway.
Which was about seven months ago?
November.
Yeah. Early November.
Yeah.
Half
okay.
November.
And that played for 2 weeks?
Six.
6 weeks.
Fourth top grossing show on Broadway.
Fourth top grossing show, like in history?
Like against Lion King and everything that was playing at that moment.
At that time?
Mm-hmm. For the season.
For that season.
Christmas season, yeah.
Yeah. That sounds fantastic. And so that's based upon box office sales or number of people in the seats
sales.
Or on sales on there?
Yeah.
And so obviously they're going to be having you come back.
Yes, I think for a longer run.
Which will be then next year.
Right.
And will that be the same kind of show?
This year, the end of this year.
Oh, again, because you were like last November, so you get the same thing. Okay, gotcha.
November,
will it be the same show? Are you going to be having the same people?
I think they're going to change it up a little bit.
In what regard?
We don't know yet.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know, if you knew our producer, Simon Painter, you would go, oh, yeah, I get it. You don't know yet. That's understandable.
Yeah.
Because we don't, because he sort of flies by the seat of his pants, and that's a compliment in a way that, you know, things just, he thinks of stuff, and yeah, it's last minute, but generally stuff happens more often than not when he says, oh, I'm thinking about doing this. And we're like, yeah, well, we'll see. And then down to the last minute, all of a sudden, boom, you know. We're there.
When we were chatting informally the other night, you were saying what a great producer he is because he's kind of hands off and allows you guys
the latitude.
In
a way, he will. He understands entertainment. He loves magic, but he doesn't really know.
Mm-hmm.
You know the insides and outs of magic. He probably does now
mm-hmm.
after so long. But he pretty much realizes that we know he hires because we know what we're doing.
Right.
And so he's pretty much letting us do mostly what we need to do to
right.
get the job done.
And when you're deciding what you're going to be doing and what order and everything, that's all, who kind of manages it among you? I mean, is there one person's kind of like, you know, when there's a band, there's always like a lead singer, somebody who's like the leader of the group. Is there somebody that you would say that, or is it just kind of...
Simon does that.
Simon?
He chooses the show order, I think.
Okay. But as far as the material, let's say, like Aaron, when you're doing the bow versus, let's say, the candle wax or other kinds of things, I mean,
yeah.
do the guys kind of know what you're doing and saying, okay, this is what I want you to do?
They know the accident that we can do, and then they choose what they want
okay.
us doing in that show.
The producer does,
yeah,
basically,
yeah.
saying, okay.
Mm-hmm. The problem with our show, it's a good problem, is that we have so much material among all of us.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to do all the stuff we can do, it'd be a 6-hour show.
Mm-hmm.
And so
that'd be fun for magicians.
The problem, of course, is trying to figure out what to do. Like, you know, there's only so much time. You know, the first version of our show that we started in Australia was like 3 hours. It was over 3 hours every night
wow.
with the intermission.
Mm-hmm.
We would constantly get up to the 3-hour, and he's like, well, you know, we can't do this.
Gotta cut.
We gotta cut this. And then we went to Broadway. It was even more cut.
So you were in Sydney before you went to New York, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, tomorrow we're doing a matinee at 11, and we have to do a 90-minute version of our show instead of 2-hour and 20-minute with an intermission. So that's quite challenging.
So are you going to be just limiting some of the effects that you guys are going to be doing, or cutting out some body or bodies?
I think our thing, we're cutting out pre-show. Hmm. We're cutting out the encore of Yuho Jin. We're taking the intermission down by some, and then also eliminating a whole section, Dan Sperry and his roulette bottle smash, which is like 20-plus minutes.
Right, right. Yeah, that could cut back quite a bit then, too.
They'll take about 40 minutes out of the show, I think, with all that.
Right. So after New York, then what were some of the other cities around the country that you guys had gone to?
Chicago, Dallas. Chicago, Dallas.
Chicago, Dallas.
Detroit for 2 weeks. And we still have yet to go, Seattle, Salt Lake City.
San Jose.
And San Jose.
And were those selected by the producer? Or who
it's actually? Magic Space. It's David Copperfield's old tour management company.
Right.
And we say his old management company because he's not touring like he was before. He's pretty much staying at the MGM, isn't it?
Yeah. So I think that was a good call because, you know, the company already knew all the cities.
Sure, had the contacts.
Knows what the market theaters. Is. Mm-hmm. And you know, they're happy. They're really happy about this.
Not only the production company, but also the theaters, I'm sure, as well, because that they have something that's solid that's going to be coming in and putting some butts in the seats, too. How was it that each of you guys had gotten selected to be on this? Was that something, again, that was Simon's idea? Or, I mean, like, Aaron, how did they contact you?
Well, at some point they did.
I actually gave Simon Aaron's contact.
Oh, okay.
I was the first one to tell Simon, you need to get this guy.
Okay, so you're making some recommendations. Saying,
yeah, we all
okay.
make recommendations.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to get Kevin a coffee now.
Yeah.
That's the least you can do.
Also lunch, maybe. Yeah. And here comes Adam back from
the second time.
He's a growing boy.
That's right.
And
still
he has to eat.
They were making my order before. Now it's ready.
Oh, now it's ready. Okay. We were just talking about getting selected over here, and that you had been selected then as well. How did you come on board?
I was part of the Illusions 2.0. Okay. So me, Aaron, and Yuho Jin were part of that cast. And then joining this show, I guess they kind of just combined the two into one. As far as getting selected for Illusions 2.0, I was just doing theater shows, and Simon came.
Where was that?
I was doing them all over. I was on like a little
tour.
Yeah, not. I mean, I like to call it a tour.
Within
but it was
state
more
or?
Like one-offs. Yeah.
Okay.
All over the country, and then and Simon, I think he'd heard about me from that. And then I emailed him, and I was just like, "Hey, you know, let's chat about this." And he came. The performance he actually saw me at was at the Magic Castle, so he came and saw me at the parlor of the Magic Castle, and then we decided to do Illusions 2.0. And I was kind of thinking it was going to be like a little one-off thing there. We just go to Australia for a month and have a good time. And that was kind of all I was expecting it to be. And then shortly after that, we did a couple more dates. We did a date in Mexico and a date in New Zealand, I think. But then shortly after that was when the whole Broadway thing kind of came to be. And, you know, it was just...
Now, is this the 2.0?
No.
Then right now, this is...
This is kind of a hybrid between the original cast and 2.0.
Who was in the original cast?
That's changed a little bit too, but out of this group, Sperry, Jeff, yourself, and Andrew, Andrew Bossom.
Okay, and he's the escapist,
right?
Yeah, from Italy, is that right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that there was another troupe. Was this just in Australia then that had like the 1800s or something? It was some
1903.
Sort of
1903.
Okay.
1903.
Was it like a steampunk kind of a thing?
So that's the third version, and it's a vintage feel.
Okay.
So what would magic be like in the year 1903?
Uh-huh. And is that still touring, or is that over there then?
No, it's done at the moment, but, you know, it's like the original cast did... did 2.5 years of international touring. You know, we did Australia, New Zealand, you know, Singapore, South America, Central America, Mexico, Europe, Eastern Europe. So I think basically the 2.0 and 1903 are going to start doing all of those that we've already done. We're just sticking in North America for the next few years.
I see. I think it's a fantastic show. I really loved it. I like the variety and everything. I mean, when I was watching you, I felt like I was watching America's Got Talent live, you know, with these screens and everything. Have you been on America's Got Talent? I know that, Kevin, of course, you have several times. But
I went on with the group of Kevin and Dan.
Yeah.
For that, so mm-hmm. yes.
Hmm. But of all the different places, it kind of reminds me a little bit, you know, of Harry Blackstone Sr. I've heard stories like whenever that he would go out and be on tour, that there would be local magicians who would kind of contact him and say, hey, we're going to be having a soiree on your honor while you're here in town or something. And so have you had the opportunity to kind of get together with some magicians around the world from time to time? Or do you kind of pretty much stay at the theater and you got to rehearse and...
We go to different areas, and sometimes there'll be, you know, the famous magicians of that little whatever city, and they come out, and it's neat. It's neat to hang and with people. Last night, John Mooring.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, he came in.
Okay. Yeah, came in, mm-hmm. and he came to the show, so it was nice to see him.
Yeah. Well, like the other night, it was nice to have Walter Blaney, you know,
and
come
Walter
in.
Brand, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I was backtracking a bit. Aaron here was on Britain's Got Talent, right? Weren't you?
Yeah. I was. now, 2 years ago.
Has it been 2 years?
3 years. 2 years. Yeah.
What did you do on there? Were you actually performing and trying to move forward? I mean, were you just a guest that was brought in, or
no? I did the actual contest.
You competed. Okay.
Yeah. I tried to do America Got Talent, but I couldn't do it because it. Yeah.
Tried to do what?
I wanted to do America Got Talent.
Oh yes.
But I could not do that.
Why was that?
I needed a green card.
Oh, so, interesting.
Yeah, so...
Huh.
Since I didn't have...
Are you illegal right now?
I was not willing to marry him.
Is this Aaron? No. So then the next best thing was Britain's Got Talent.
Like, yeah.
The next biggest thing is Britain's Got Talent.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did that.
Because I guess they don't have Belgium's Got Talent.
They do.
Oh, do they?
But it doesn't.
Okay.
Reach that far.
Okay.
Last year they had four. No. yes, they do. They do that. But Britain's Got Talent is bigger of uh-huh. Europe. So I did that, and then I started doing the blindfold act, and that went down pretty well. And then I
mm-hmm.
I could do
the right.
And so it's good publicity anyway. It's
and for that blindfold act, how did I always like to know about creativity? What is it that
if I wax my eyebrows?
Yeah. Oh, you and you thought, well, that didn't hurt so bad. I think I can go a little bit more and put some in my eyes.
How did that? Yeah.
Because you're putting like hot wax on your eyes. For those people who don't know what he's talking about, the blindfold over here.
It's a pretty crazy idea, and back in 2003, I did a masterclass with Jeff McBride,
mm-hmm.
and this was leading up to the FISM competition that I
okay.
was going to take
in
part.
Stockholm.
Yeah, no, this was Den Haag.
Den Haag, uh huh, sure.
The Netherlands.
I was there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I didn't do an act, but a friend of mine brought a videotape.
Mm-hmm.
In which I did that blindfold act, like a basic version of that blindfold act. And so they showed the video instead, and then Jeff started talking about it, and everybody was like...
Had a buzz going.
Yeah, uh-huh. So and at some point, the idea was brought up to so the goal was to stay away as far as possible from any like magician's blindfold method or...
Yeah.
To make it look something totally different.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
And then one of the wildest ideas was... pour candle wax in your eyes, but not for real. Like to make it look like
it looks like that. Sure.
Like there's ways is to make it look like something.
Yeah. Don't try and this
then,
at home, kids.
Yeah. Okay. And then at some point, I mailed Jeff that I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
This is after burns and error. Yeah, lot of that stuff.
After 50 shades of burn.
Yeah.
Of red.
Yeah. Red.
Sure. Mm. Red.
Oh. And then. And I just said, oh no, I meant find a way to fake it or to, but so yes, I was able to do it for real, and then this is one like probably the strongest moment in that act. So
mm-hmm.
also because a friend, I said, it doesn't work. I'm going to find no. So he kept me
focused on trying to actually come up with the idea
to achieve that, and then by doing that, so this is what.
So you
pushed me that.
So you put this real burning hot. Candle wax in your eyes every show.
I try, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
commitment
that
to the art.
Like that sounds like fun.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Give me a stick and I will hit him now. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, one time there was Cadillacs under my eyelid.
Under the eyelid?
Yeah. And like, yes. I was too late to close the eyes. And,
So have you talked to a ophthalmologist or anything? Well, that too. Have you ever talked to like an eye doctor that says, you shouldn't be doing this? I mean, or does it affect you in any way, or...
It's like I should have said, if it makes you happy. No.
I'm just curious. Well, we're talking about Andrew, too. We had said, you know, does this affect you? Always holding your breath every single show, every single line. And he says, you know what? He goes, he talked to a doctor once. He goes, he doesn't know. He goes, that's the problem. He goes, the doctor says, well, what you're doing, you have to find out. Yeah. Like, in some years down the line, if it's actually going to, like, affect your... you know, your brain, your whatever, for being upside down and holding your breath for as long as you're doing. So, I don't know, maybe the same thing with you.
I was wondering about that. You know, like when people are doing upside down things and all the blood's coming, you know, to your eyes and everything, when Andrew's doing that it's got to be bad.
Well, come on, okay, it's...
Well, people use inversion tables all the time.
But now put on top of that 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes, you're holding your breath all the time. Yeah. This is not normal.
Well, you're buoyant in the water a little bit, though.
Yeah, perhaps. Upside down for the straitjacket.
That's what I mean, the straitjacket at the beginning over there.
So he's upside down twice. Every
now, do you know what his next idea, he says he's thinking about? Did he tell you guys this? Uh-huh. He goes, what do you think? He goes, maybe for the next version of the show... I'll do an upside down straitjacket, but then be put into the tank, wet, with the straitjacket, and escape all that. I'm like, wow. Have you tried this? I said, have you tried to like wet material and get? I go. That'd be impressive. Nobody's done it. I don't know if you'd want to do it.
But.
Yeah, I think the fabric would get tight.
Yeah, I don't know.
So you're saying actually a straitjacket in the
inside the tank,
inside the water torture.
Yeah,
cotton shrinks.
Yeah, well, you know, even the mannequin didn't last at the Magic Castle. Remember that one with had Houdini in the water tank, and I think he had a straitjacket on in that thing, and that mannequin didn't last. They had made that special tank for the TV show Tanked or something. And anyhow, it didn't last very long. Now they still got the tank down there, but not the. So in other words, if it's not good for a mannequin, even I wouldn't think it'd be good for a human being to actually get inside and do that. And creating what you have done, then Adam, with the movie screens and everything, were you? I mentioned America's Got Talent. I've seen a lot of guys doing that kind of not that thing, but different things where they're interacting with it. Were you inspired by that, or what kind of?
That was actually an act that when I first started doing cruise ships. Well, I was doing college shows before that, but I it was bed sheets and a projector. I had a little. It was.
Bed sheets and projector at home.
Something else.
Can imagine some little kid.
Hey, Mom, what's this?
But they still have that.
No, I was doing these college shows with
bed sheets and a projector. Adam Trent.
It's a great pickup line. It was actually the boy band NSYNC. I went and saw NSYNC at the MTV Music Awards back in 2000, and they did something where they had these. That they had five different TV screens, and they but they had five different TV screens, and each band member had their own TV screen, and basically their head got blown up inside the TV screen, and they started dancing, and it was kind of Blue Man Group esque. So I made a version with bed sheets and a projector, like I said, that I did at college shows for years, purely because I could pack it up into a little suitcase, and. The actual graphics of it and the lighting of it was not great, but the fundamentals of the tricks were still there. You know, it had all the same fundamentals of the actual, really all the same elements of the act. Now minus a professional animator and everything, so the act itself is probably 6 years old. Maybe
but you just fine tune it still all the time, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean the tricks haven't changed that much. It's really like I said, it's just the graphics and the. And the animation has been what's really been improved on it,
right.
And that's just been bringing in someone who knows what they're doing to spend a little bit of money on it.
Right. Kevin, have you had any kind of challenges or something that is different with this particular tour? Because you've toured the world like with your own show and done other kinds of things independently. How does this differ when you're interacting and working with the troupe?
Well, this group is great. It's fun. It's
like a family.
Everybody gets along very well, and. You know, there are no huge egos to deal with, and it's great. and just being on stage with such talented people make you keep your game up, you know.
That's a good point.
It's fun. I'm living the dream. It's a blast, and you know, I hope it continues for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And I think you'd said, or Jeff, about you got 2 or 3 years of contract still. I mean, you still got a lot of stuff in the future, some stuff still going with this same tour, I guess, kind of going back again. So you'll be back in Houston again perhaps next year or whatever, right?
Very possible.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. We're doing more, the next tour is more one- and two-nighters. It's short, smaller cities. We've covered the big ones now. Then we're going to do the smaller cities next tour.
Well, you know, you're not really packing the big illusions and everything. I think about Copperfield or Henning or some of the other, or Blackstone and others who had to schlep all this stuff in and out.
The train loads,
exactly.
We do have three semis, but half of it or
sound
is it's sound and lights. That whole lighting system is massive, and.
Right.
So, yeah, we actually, when you think about it, a lot of illusionists or magicians come to our show and go, oh, it's not what we expected, because there's no origamis, there's no, you know, there's...
I thought about that.
You know, really, when you think about it, there's no standard illusions in
our
show
tricks,
all.
Mm-hmm.
No big box tricks, zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I never really thought about it until a few months back, and I went, this is not a magic show, really, that anyone's familiar with.
And yet that it fills the hall all the way to the back, certainly. I mean, people are picking it up and seeing it as an illusion.
We got close-up card tricks, an egg bag. I mean, you know, we got small props happening in this show.
Right. Well, even the close-up, Adam, that you're doing, you know, Ambitious Card and stuff. Do you change your card tricks from night to night or from time to time?
He doesn't know any other card tricks. He only knows one.
That's
okay, that's it.
I'm still working on it. The actual running order stays pretty much the same. The only thing that I've had a little bit of flexibility with changing, which has been really nice for me, has been the pre-show bit that I do.
Mm-hmm.
That I've changed a couple times, I think, since the tour started, just to try out some new stuff.
That's nice. I really like that.
So that's been a really good thing. I'm working on a new fortune cookie act right now that I've been doing for maybe a month or...
Do you like mentalism?
It's my first time doing anything like it.
Really?
I've dabbled with it a little bit, but it's the most different act for me that I've tried before. I've never really been in any kind of prediction thing like that. So, you know, I'm doing, I guess for people that are listening, to make sense, it's like a fortune cookie prediction. And it's brand new. It's something that I've never dabbled with, so I'm just still finding the beats of the routine and still doing it all. So that's the only thing that's changed here and there.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, we have an announcement. Go ahead, Scott.
Just had somebody walk in over here that got David Williamson. Hey there, David.
Hey, Scott. How are you?
Okay, great,
are we on the radio?
We are actually recording live here right now. So have a seat. Yes, please do.
Well, the reason I called this meeting is we're disbanding the Illusionists.
Thank God somebody is.
Well, we got a whole new concept. We're going to have a bat hanging upside down.
Sure.
And
and
instead of 8 inches, we're going to have 22.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And they're only on for 2 minutes each?
All for 2 minutes each.
And they don't finish the drink, which is great.
Yeah, it's called the TAOM.
Bird.
Kidding. Of course. Yeah. Now, here's my question to you, Scott. Was this the hotel where the German magician got killed?
The answer was no. It was the IBM. And that was 1978, and that was outside. It wasn't in the building.
No, I know, but there was one here. Corner.
There was one where there was a fellow who got shot.
Yeah, I was there for both of them.
Okay.
Which is suspicious.
Wait a minute. I started to see
Jay Marshall sat down with us at breakfast here, and he goes, did you hear about the German magician who got shot around the corner and killed? I go, no, what's the punchline? He goes, no, really. He was newlywed, and his young wife didn't speak any English. He was, like, left here.
And apparently, she didn't
Texas.
Have like a passport or something to get back home.
It was
and she
horrible.
Was broke
yeah.
and didn't have enough money to get back
and
home.
And the other convention was TAOM, and John Carney and I are in the lobby of this Hyatt Atrium, and we hear people are throwing cards, and there's noises and yelling, and all night long, it's early in the morning, and we hear pop, 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 bang, wand or something. And then we hear, help me, help me. And then, like a Hitchcock movie, the elevator comes down slowly, and there's a guy with blood streaming out of his face.
Gosh.
And he comes down, and he falls down right at our feet, and I'm going, I was just about to do reset or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
And he got blood on my... It was wild.
I was
there's
there.
A whole
I was
Texas...
It was like 1 in the morning.
You
we
must
were
have been
right
there.
There.
Yeah, you were
yes.
there.
Because I remember when the guy came down the elevator with him on this dolly, you know, and there was blood, you know.
Can we say the name, though?
I know.
We can't say the name.
Probably
not. No, we can't say the name. Okay, because we know what the name is.
It's all over. They took care of it.
That's right.
He was actually okay later.
Yeah.
Shot in the face.
And he never did press charges against
the shooter. Yeah, it's a weird Texas kind of thing.
That's right. Well, everybody carries a gun, you know.
Yeah.
My wife always says, be careful when you cut off somebody, because they're probably packing, in the car.
Bang one gun.
Yeah. Wow. And so the reason you're here, by the way, is that you're going to be filling in for Jeff then tomorrow. Is that right?
No, I'm filling in for you.
Oh, for Eric. Okay. Yes. You got to learn that candle wax thing, though, you know.
Well, here's the chagrin on all this thing. I didn't realize when I asked David to, and I'm leaving tomorrow.
Wait, don't tell me your son's not...
No, he is graduating. He's not really graduating. No, I have to be there. Boy, this is going to be a rough one.
You know what's
everyone's coming. And so I asked, I go, David, can you replace me for... Yes, I can. Thing, and then all of a sudden I look at the schedule and realize that there's three shows.
I know.
And by the way.
I'm like, oh my God. So, and I'm like,
all your fans are like, let's wait till the weekend to see Jeff. You know?
I am so sorry. It's 11, 3, and 7. It's a brutal schedule. And I just went, But the only guy who I would ever...
Well, that's what I'm going to say when I come out on stage. You know, David Williamson, who? I'm so sorry.
So you got to change your name from the Trickster to the...
Yeah, I got all the...
You got an egg bag routine and everything. Watch Steel and all the rest of that.
I stole his guard mouth years ago, so
sure.
I'm halfway there.
It's okay. I got a bunch of raccoons. You want one?
And so you're just going to be in and out then for the shows and back out, because you don't have any children graduating, I assume.
She graduated last week.
Last week, congratulations. Yep. From
Yellow Springs High School.
That's great. And going on to where?
Well, she is a 3-year graduate. She graduated a year early, and she's going to go to France for a year and do an overseas thing.
In studying French?
Studying French, yeah.
And does she have a specialty?
Drinking wine, learn how to smoke, things like that.
Yeah, things you don't learn in college here in the U.S.
It's only learned in France.
Yeah. Well, they specialize in that, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
Men? I'm assuming.
I don't know.
Oh, good for you.
True enough.
Let's go off the rails here.
Somewhere along the road. And so, really, everybody's going to be coming in. Kind of reminds me, you know, from time to time that whenever Matt King is not working, and he's had guys come in, I've talked like Steve Bragazzi, and Steve saying, I know you guys are disappointed.
Yeah. That's here's the most humbling experience in magic is to follow Jeff Hobson and follow Matt King, and I've done both to stand in for them. You know, and it's a very humbling experience, but it builds character. I recommend it.
And you have the strongest character, I guess, as a
result. It's very humbling.
That's right. And where are you going from here then? After this is you going to be kind of like the fill-in guy?
No, I'm just doing this one-off thing, and there's other stuff in the works down the road, maybe happening.
Mr. Williamson here is like one of the busiest guys I know, man, doing corporate. He's flying everywhere.
Well, I'm doing a lot of Disney cruises these days.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
That's what I'm doing.
Well, I think it'd be great because there are a lot of kids, and that you do a lot of stuff with kids.
Yeah. Yes.
But does Disney allow you to thrash children about on their shows?
Well, yeah, good question.
I don't thrash them about, Jeff.
Yes, you do, and you do it very well.
You pick them up and move them about, you know, physically manhandling, boy handling.
I've gotten notes. Let me just say this. I've been called into the office a couple of times.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Really, yeah.
But they still say you're okay. But
they just say less thrashing, you know.
Yeah. Don't pull their shorts up over their head and give them wedgies and things like that.
Yeah. It's I've tamed it down a little bit.
Just for the show.
For the show.
Yeah, you can still go back.
Oh, tomorrow, yeah, I'm going to be throwing these Texas kids off the stage.
Yeah, good.
Kids been coming to the show?
We have had pretty good.
You'll see. don't give it away. Lots of surprises in store for
matinees. Yeah, it's
going to be fine.
And they're both going to be an hour and a half. Is that right then, Kevin?
First one's short.
Then I'll say, can you come back for the evening
regular
show?
Okay. And then the evening show at 7:30.
No, I think it's 11, 3, and 7. I think it's even numbers tonight, isn't it?
You just show up and they tell you, okay, go.
We're there all day.
Just be there.
We're there all day. Just whenever you start, ready. Just go for it.
What number is this? How many cities have you done since Broadway? You don't keep track.
25.
And how many do you have to go? Another 25?
No, three.
Three or four.
What do you mean three or four?
We're for the year?
For the summer.
For this tour. They're almost finished with this leg.
For this leg, yeah.
And then they're going to be starting up again. Oh, I know what I was going to talk about, is that you'd also mentioned about the TV special. Is that something that you can kind of...
Well, it's not 100%, but it's close. It's a possibility that we're going to be doing a NBC special that hopefully taping it, or whatever we call it these days, videoing it, somewhere in early July for release before we start our tour again in late September.
Oh, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's like the first time that they're trying out, I guess, a two-hour special, I guess. Is the,
wow. For NBC.
Which hasn't happened in really? Recent memory. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's the plan. It's apparently in almost done. But
so the answer is yes, I'll fill in for you for that.
Yeah, sure. Of course, because I don't like television. I don't want to do
Somebody's got to do
the
in-and-out.
Have you seen yourself on TV?
Yeah, I don't like watching any video of myself. I hate it. I walk out of the room. Somebody says, oh, watch this for my dad or, you know, my wife. Puts it out. No, and I walk out of the room. I can't watch myself. It's impossible. I don't do it.
I think
you
I've heard tell
yourself? All right, can you watch yourself? Guys,
I can't watch you, but I can watch myself.
I understand.
Yeah, I'm there you go.
You know
point taken.
Exactly. I feel the same way.
Have you ever had something go wrong? I mean, where that you had to maybe extend a little bit of time or shorten some time or
that's
something
how he built
happened
his
on,
act.
On this? Yeah.
Are you talking specifically to me?
No, I'm asking, you know, Adam.
I'm just like, wow,
Adam,
I
mean, you were just talking over there, and Adam or Kevin, something that perhaps...
Well, the band's computer crashed the other night, and we had to call Jeff right now.
Well, you know, that I am the default guy.
So you go out and hum in the microphone?
No, but the problem is that the timing was such that as soon as everything... And I knew what happened, because I just looked up, and I didn't hear anything. And then I said, there... And I said, they're going to be coming knocking any second. And sure, like 30 seconds later, knocking. The problem was, is I was in the midst of changing. So I had no pants on.
See?
And my shirt was half.
It could have been funny.
Yeah, it would have been funny.
With the white paper things on
there. Yeah, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. And I walk out, and they said, can you, and I said, you know, the stage manager says, can you come out? We got to, and I said, look at me. And
like
he
now?
Goes, oh, and I said, try Andrew Basso. He's right next door here. And Andrew says, yeah, no problem. I'll come up. Whatever. And he, of course, he comes out and does his
let me finish my spaghetti.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And he's finished his spaghetti. And
also
he did
the
his,
white paper.
Yeah, the white paper.
I'm playing Super Mario. Congratulations.
And, yeah, so he did it. But, I mean, it was just bad timing on their part. You know.
The band had bad timing.
The band had bad timing. You know, did you hear the drummer, for God's sake?
That is interesting, by the way, that you do have a live band, and then you also integrate the recordings that are digitized as well. So it's really great that way that the band can kind of keep up with it. I'm thinking back again, like with Blackstone, for an example, who would travel with a band, or they would, you know, pay for the union guys to play or whatever. But the fact that you got a couple guitar players, is there a guy playing the synthesizer also there, or...?
Keyboard, trumpet,
yeah. And then, guitar, of course, the drummer on the side. So how many guys actually in the band?
And guitar.
Three.
There are three. Okay. Yeah, and the fact that's particularly, because I'm sure, like in Andrew's case, that when he's holding his breath under the water, that it's different all the time, and so they kind of got to have the...
There's a little bit of different timing on it, because you never know. Sometimes he does 3 minutes and 10 seconds, sometimes he'll do... He did once 3:40-something, and that's sort of... You know, that's the time we're all backstage going, well, we know he gets out. But then we're like, you know, then we just sort of ease around the curtain and stop for a moment and go.
Chatter stops.
And like, it stops, and we're like, okay. And everyone else is like, yeah, fine with it, because they don't know better, but we know better. And so when it got to 3:40 that one time, I'm like, is it going to be okay? So we're a little bit worried. Yeah.
Has he told you that after a certain time, if there is an issue, I mean,
he and the stage crew that takes care of things, Sam... and Graham.
This is important, by the way, David, for you to know, just in case.
Am I going in the water?
Well, you will.
You may be coming out with the axe, breaking
and
out.
So there is a you know, fail-safe thing that's okay, if this happens, and yeah, and they had to rehearse pulling them out.
Yeah.
I mean, which was quite humorous to watch a couple of guys actually try and crawl in from the top and reach down and drag
him out of the water. Wow.
And I saw that rehearsal, and that didn't go too swift. So, you know.
4 minutes to get him out.
Yeah. It was like, you know, and he was already poached at that time.
Yeah.
You know.
There's just no way to break that lexing.
No.
It's not?
No, the pressure from the inside, it wouldn't break.
You know, that happened actually at TAOM one time down in Corpus Christi. I can't remember the guy's name, but he was doing a water torture and didn't get out. They actually had to break it, and water's flooding out on the stage and everything. And the next day, gosh, you know, just this huge bruise. I think he broke a couple of ribs and everything in this. Can't remember the guy's name.
Johnny H. Palmer?
No, it wasn't Johnny, no. I think it was one of his chickens. No. But
well, there was that FISM in Portugal where the whole glass broke and the water came like a waterfall over the front into the orchestra pit.
Sure.
Because he had made it a substandard tank, you know.
Anton Lopez.
Really?
Is it Anton Lopez? Is that what it was?
It was because of...
And boy, the mime had to come out and he...
Because he had a cinder block or something that...
It hit the glass, right?
Hit the glass. Jumped in with a cinder block tied to his leg.
Oh, that's what it was.
And that's what hit the glass and broke it. I see.
He made it out of like Devil's Teardrop when it had one in his pocket by accident. And it touched
the wrong place, the wrong time. Yeah, over there.
Wow.
Have you, Adam or Aaron, also had a situation or something that hasn't gone exactly according to plan?
When we were on Broadway, the video screens have failed a couple times. Mm-hmm. So
just because that's got to be perfect. I mean, your timing to jump in and out of the screen.
Yeah, it was just the way they started it. It was just technology messes up sometimes. So it just glitched and nothing showed up. So I grabbed a floating table from backstage, and that was my way of killing a few minutes with no projection and no, potentially no microphone. Well, I guess my microphone was working, but we just needed a few minutes for them to reset everything, and then it worked fine. But
and then for Aaron with his
bow and arrow. Go ahead.
You missed, didn't you, one night?
Oh, yeah, I killed plenty. And then they go to blackout.
They go to blackout.
And they clean the stage. No, but in 2.0, at some point, I was the act right before Raymond Crowe's Shadow Act.
Mm-hmm.
So they had machines dropping a screen in front of me.
Yeah.
And one night, it didn't drop in front of me. It dropped on
you. On you?
Yeah. No.
Yeah.
And then I was...
To knock you out.
Well, yeah, it had a chain in it. Yeah. Yeah, right on your noggin.
Oh, I've been knocked out before, like in Mexico City.
On stage?
Right, Kevin?
Nightclub,
On it. So I stopped doing that since then. But what I used to do in at the end of my blindfold act, so I have three people up on stage.
Uh-huh.
One's holding a bag, one's holding a board. And then I have a lady holding a watermelon or a pineapple.
Right, pineapple, right.
And then I blindfold myself with the candle wax and all that stuff. And then I start punching the bike with a big swivel knife. I have nunchucks.
Right, nunchucks, right. And you break the board the guy's holding, right?
With the sword, I have a sword on the back, and I cut the pineapple.
On the top of this lady's head?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And then I remove the blindfold, and I see that everybody's is happy. So the lady is
no one's dead. You're alive, let's put it that way.
Well, could be that, but like she was fine with everything.
And then,
so I take their hands, and then it's like a company bow.
Right.
And the guys go leave the stage. And what I do then is I ask for an applause for the lady, and I do this kissing. I did that kiss gag where you
turn your face. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, where you kiss and turn your... Mm-hmm.
So I did that. And I was smiling to the audience, and I got this punch in my face.
She hit you?
She punched you?
Oh, really?
Closed hand.
And not
it wasn't like a slap. It was a hit.
And I didn't know what happened, so I grabbed her arm, and then I realized it's her... punching me in the face.
Whoa, so you caught the fist?
Before she hit him.
I caught it on the way back, so I took it.
You took the first one, and she was coming with the other one.
So she punched, and then I...
Was it just because you gave her such a scare, she was pissed off? Is that it?
No.
It was because
you kissed her.
I thought...
Nothing wrong with attacking when you have samurai swords,
but
kissing.
Probably there with her parents, you know.
Yeah. I thought she was going to say... She took her you took your blindfold off, and she took a bow, and her head fell off. That's her. That's her.
Sometimes it doesn't happen.
Nearly had this nick,
But I cut the pineapple, and then when I removed the blindfold, and it's still on there, so I have to sort of...
Oh.
But I remember one time he had a watermelon up there on the girl's head.
How can you miss that?
And,
for the color
and he goes to do it, and he stops. And he pauses with the samurai sword, and he just pauses, and he waits, and he waits, and he waits. And the girl had one hand on the handlebars and the other hand up on the pineapple.
No!
So he just waited.
He would have taken her
and
arm.
And you saw her face go...
Oh!
She pulls her hand down, and then he can continue.
That was actually FISM. That was the very first time I did that. I was,
could have been your last time.
At FISM. And so it's better
in the contest.
Yeah, in the actual contest.
Okay.
And so a friend of mine was filming that. He wasn't supposed to, but he did. So I still have a video of that somewhere.
Oh my god!
And it's also built in the music. Like the first time I miss on purpose, so it's way too high, and then
yeah.
I'm so wait, hold on, and then I go for a second time, and then you see the lady
trying to balance the watermelon. With her. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you blindfolded at that?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was saying earlier that he's got like this candle wax, and then he's got a blindfold and everything on.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Tin foil.
Tin foil. That's right.
It's like candle wax is like 15 layers of.
Yeah, so lucky right. that it's so lucky that you're a real magician because
yeah,
people are saying.
I was doing a blindfold drive one time, and as I was driving along, little people were kind of jumping out of the way. I was in a parade, actually, and I was blindfolded. It was funny because some guy's on the street, and he said, "Hey, you got the time?" And I go, "Yeah, 7:20." I just glanced at my watch.
But how?
I got this hood on and everything, you know.
You're quite a mentalist, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. Or at least I think it's about 11:20. Yeah. And so some other... That was a near miss. What has been one of the best places you guys have ever been? I mean, that you really enjoyed, like, the venue, perhaps that there was something about, you know, Adam will say, like, you like
I
the...
I love Providence.
Providence, yeah. Rhode Island?
Yeah, there's great. Been some great stuff.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What was so great, special about that?
The theater.
Great theater, amazing mm-hmm. theater.
You know, well, because people's more intimate, closer to the stage?
It's,
or?
It's an original, you know, 1926... It's uh-huh. one that hasn't right? changed. It's an old vaudeville house
cool.
that was made for great entertainment and
yeah,
looked beautiful.
Yeah,
and the people,
beautiful.
When you came mm-hmm. in, it sets the stage for wow. We're you know this is going to be a special event, and it just mm-hmm. feels yeah. good. The
great
city
crowds.
Was nice.
Yeah,
yeah,
it was good.
Yeah
I
so.
Love that.
I think Washington, D.C. had one of the nicest theaters also at the Kennedy Center. And also the Buffalo Shays in Buffalo, New York was...
Now, that was a massive place, too. That
huge.
Was one of our bigger places. But
yeah.
there was
gorgeous.
Something about it that, you know, it's an original. It hasn't changed since the 20s. And you felt that you were in a special
like
a place.
Cathedral or something.
Yeah.
Philadelphia.
Nice, the Academy
but
of
you
music.
Didn't feel like that you were overwhelmed by it, I guess, necessarily.
No.
I mean,
no.
It was just it was a beautiful place.
It was just... like walking into a European church.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you guys have played some amazing venues, like the Opera House in Sydney,
Sydney
and,
yeah.
and like big amphitheaters in Mexico. I mean, you've been to some enormous venues.
Did you like a Sydney? I mean, you didn't mention that. Is that so? That kind of a cool, I mean, I've been
well,
there, but I'm
yeah,
not.
It's the iconic, you know, it's like
theater in the world, right?
Yeah, it's a, and it was very cool. They had to do some weird thing where we did the large room, but they had to cut off like a third of it because it would they may have to make a backstage
over there.
Exactly.
To sell all your merch. You got so much stuff.
Merch, yeah.
Yeah.
No, and so they yeah, it was beautiful, gorgeous.
Wow.
The stage is a bit small though.
It what?
Stage. The stage is not that big at Senior France.
Oh really?
Right? No, it's not.
I wouldn't
big.
Have expected that. Because that's usually not so much for live performances. Well, I'll say it is mostly like for symphonies and everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
And for music,
yeah.
as opposed to having like a play.
They were really. We found out from the Sydney Opera House, and then also subsequent many other theaters, especially in the United States, are like, "Thank you so much for coming here." They're talking about you know us as you know, why did you brought a whole new demographic.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with the Sydney Opera House.
Yeah. Theater, yeah.
They
yeah.
never had a family thing that worked so well across so many
age
demographics
groups,
and age
yeah,
groups.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And all of a sudden, they're like, "This is great! This was the best, one of the best things they said ever happened to the Sydney Opera House is having our show in there because it increased now all kinds of other shows that were
mm-hmm.
not a possibility
yeah.
or never even thought of before."
Yeah,
same thing happened on Broadway with
right
the old man Niederlander.
Right, the Marquee mm-hmm. Theater. Yeah, they said thank you. I mean, even the guys backstage were going. Thank you so much for being here, they said, because we've never had so many people consistently in this theater ever in recent memories, and you brought a whole new demographic.
Yeah.
And so people coming into the theater, and they're saying, hey, this isn't so bad, we're going to come back again maybe
yeah.
for another kind of a thing. So
yeah.
it just
yeah.
kind of breaks the ice for some people who haven't attended the theater and thinking it's, yeah, that's great. Well, listen, I know that you have to go on rehearsal. I appreciate your time. You have to...
again,
<Okay. laughs> part of that contest. Got to get ready for the contest later. yeah, well, if you quit drinking all of the liquid you've been in. The name of my podcast is called The Magic Word, and I always like to, and I know Jeff and you and Kevin have been on independently, and you've told me about that before. We talked about that, but what would be your magic word? You know, Aaron and Adam, what would you, for an example, it wouldn't be necessarily, I'm not talking about like abracadabra or something, but what is it that is important in your life? What is it that's like your life's motto, your creed? It doesn't have to be a word, it could be a sentence, a phrase, something. What's important to you? And David?
Oh,
Go ahead, Jeff. Laugh.
Laugh. Fantastic. That's good. And we do.
Creating. I'll say creating.
Creating. That's good.
Being content.
How do you focus and be content?
No, I mean, I just mean in the sense of like be content with where
whatever
things are career wise, because I've always, no matter what I've been doing, I've always felt like, oh man, I'm not even close to what I want to be doing, and I'm trying to get used to being content with where I'm at
and enjoying the moment.
Enjoying the moment, and not mm-hmm. like, oh, there's so much further to go still, and just stressing over that, and just kind of enjoying this.
Yeah, because later you might look back and say, I wish I would have enjoyed that
right.
more at the time, being in the moment.
Once things nosedive, yeah.
Be content.
Yeah.
Broadway, NBC special. Man, there's so much more.
Yeah, it's got to be something else. That's right. Kevin, anything?
Yeah, no, just be in the moment, enjoy it. You know, my wife travels with me, so
that's great.
Really happy about that.
Yeah, and you've been married now 3 years. I think I just saw on Facebook, congratulations for your anniversary. 6 years, was it? Okay.
Yeah.
Think of somebody. But you did you just recently have an anniversary?
Yeah, like 3 days ago.
3 days ago. That's what I was thinking. Congratulations. Yes. And David?
Hostess Ding Dongs.
Hostess Ding Dongs.
They mean a lot to me. As opposed to Goshman Ding Dongs. They don't mean that much anymore.
Those are hard to find.
Yeah.
I got one.
And harder to hold on to. Yes, go ahead, Jeff.
I can't believe you said that.
Okay.
Wow.
Well,
you're
you know,
edgy.
People are wanting to buy them, and so it's, you know.
Whatever, walk your way out of that one.
Oh, boy.
You know, they're popular at magic auctions. Yes, what were you going to say then?
I don't know. Nothing.
Nothing.
I think we should just cut this off right now.
Yeah. Cut it off 10 minutes ago.
Okay, listen, thank you guys again very much. I appreciate you being here. And on the magic word, until next time, this is David Williamson, Jeff Hobson, and Aaron Crow, Adam Trent, and, of course, Kevin James. And for magic word, this is Scotty out. All right, we're going to have an addendum over here to The Illusionist, just a minute, with Antonio Hoyo, who is the one who is Charlie Chaplin, that works with Kevin Hello.
Hey, how are you, sir?
Fine, thank you. So Jeff and Dave are saying that you've got some great stories. That you've been...
I got quite a few in my life.
Does this look infected to you?
I'm sorry.
That's right. Oh, that's right. Your better side.
Thank you very much.
So, yes. So what is one thing that you could tell me? What's one great story?
Well, the most greatest thing I can tell you is about having an experience when I went to Africa to film a movie. And then when I started in my show business career, it was totally unexpected. I was 13 when I went to a circus in my country, Colombia, is where I'm from. And I bought my ticket like any spectator, and I sit. And when the show started, the ringmaster came out and he goes, "Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight we'll have this and this and this." And next thing I know, he keeps going like this, and I'm thinking, "What's going on?" And every time he would do that, like this. So I turn around thinking that it was to the person behind me.
But he was talking to you.
Yeah, finally he covered the microphone and he goes, "Excuse me, give me your hand." So I give him my hand, picks me up, and I'm in the center ring. And he goes, "Go right across, and you see it's two curtains over there. Go right through those curtains and tell them that I'm the owner and they put makeup on you." And I went. I arrived there. I go, "Some gentleman in the ring sent me to do this." And of course, when you're a novice, everybody starts joking around. So I did it. And next thing I know, I did the show. And I never been in performance in my life. I was 13 years old. And
and that's how you got started, show business.
I did two performances with them. And then after, I said, "Thank you for coming here." And he goes, "No, here is some money for the shows. And here's the money for a taxi. And I want you to go home and..."
And so what were you doing, actually, for them? I mean, were you doing, like, a trapeze artist, or what?
No. I started doing trapeze after I arrived in the United States.
Seriously?
That's where I got my contract. And actually, it's where I got my citizenship in the United States. I booked myself as a trapeze artist, trampoline, and high wire walker. I never done any of that because I'm afraid of heights.
I see.
And I did it. And I was like, next thing I know, and for about a period of 6 months, I put an ad on the paper that it says looking for a little major proportion to itself who can do trapeze, trampoline, high wire, and be an imitator of Charlie Chaplin. And nobody will call for my job. And every time I call, it's nobody. So
yeah,
it's how I got my moment. And
so how long have you been doing Charlie Chaplin?
I've been doing this character for about 45 years of my life.
45 it's an inspiration. Years.
I was very young when I used to watch silent movies.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know why the little man with this sporky idea, thinking he was all preppy. got to me, and I go, it's amazing. But what it got to me is that when I got to know his movies and read about him, he was a great, how do you say, he was a beautiful person of creating a moment without talking to make you feel upset, happy. He had that moment, and so I would just...
Without saying anything.
Yeah, without anything. So he was a man who can be very charming. Perhaps he's, he will come to walk in and you think that he was talking to you, but it was directing to the person behind you. So he was very smart, and it was a privilege. In 83, I was doing a special promotion for children's at Paramount Studio, and I'm standing in one of the corners or inside the studio. I was just very relaxing like this. And this lady looks at me and starts doing like this. And I'm thinking, uh-oh. And I thought she was going to come to give me a hard time. So I was preparing myself.
Yeah.
And as she got close to me, she touched my face and she goes, the difference between you and my father is the height. And I go, excuse me? She goes, you know, yes.
Look just like her father.
Yeah, she goes, I'm Geraldine Chaplin. And I nearly...
Oh, my.
I start shaking and going, and this is a really moment. She goes, You're wonderful. You're great. No matter what you are, you're a very special person. And I don't know why. I just started doing it. And it was around 83 when I met Kevin James in a nightclub in California called Crockers. Very crazy, chaotic place. So we had a sign in the door that says, if you be offended by using dirty words, please do not come in. Yeah, because it was that thing, It was then you walk on the stage and you hear that, and then you can go back and go, oh, you too. And they go, wow. So it was that kind of rough comedy, because a transition from a circus to a stage in cabaret is totally different audiences. So Kevin started working there, and we call him the Hair Man Dude because he had a blonde hair long.
Yeah.
And he was totally crazy. And 2 years later, he asked me to work with him, and I go, if we can think of an idea how to use Chaplin, I'm here. Yes. So the idea of this... Chaplin became, because I said, you know, remember when you were young, you have a box of toys, and no matter all those toys, one of them is your favorite. Take care of it, but you put one aside. And I go, I'm going to be that. I'm the toy you always create. Come alive, but I have to be very rude to you in order to work.
Yeah.
Like a mouse shaft is going to work. So the more, how do you say, kind of, not rude, but in the way of sarcastic, it started working. And then next thing I know, 32 years later, we're still here.
Now, Jeff was saying something earlier about Siegfried and Roy, and that they wanted to have you work on their show. Is that right, that Roy was interested?
You know, it's funny. I opened with them in 1978 at Stardust. I opened with them in 1978 at Stardust, and it was an amazing thing because in 74 I moved to Vegas just to be me. And every Wednesday we go to this little place.
You didn't have a job. You just went to Vegas thinking,
just taking a break from the city. I don't want anything. I just want to chill.
Yeah.
It was my show and two friends of mine want to be hippie clowns.
Okay.
You know? So on Wednesday nights I go to this place and I like to go and talk to Gary Darwin, you know what I mean?
Because
a lot of magicians.
Yeah, on Wednesday nights.
And when I arrive in Vegas that night, during those times they have... close-up magicians in many shows. And I used to hang out a lot with Jimmy Grippo.
Oh, yeah. Daniel Cross and all those guys,
Jimmy Grippo and all those people.
Michael Skinner.
Just, exactly, Mike Skinner. And every time I go to the place, he asks, where's the little guy? And he goes, right there. And he asks for a beer and a whiskey and two cheers, and he always wanted to sit next to me. Where's the little guy? And it was that thing. So, you know, it was lovely. And one day I'm there, and as I'm looking at these photographs, Siegfried comes to me and he goes, hey, my name is Siegfried, and me and my brother want to do an act. And I go, what do you mean? He goes, yeah, we'd like to do an act. You think you're available, but... I said, look, I'm sorry, but I'm on my way to Florida. I was really leaving the next
day.
With
the circus,
Yeah, no, I was going to a circus world in Florida to do a show.
Okay.
And how can we get a contact? I go, listen, this is where I'm going to be in Florida. And they came, they followed me up there in Florida. And they saw me performing, and then it says... can we work together? And I did. I did. I worked with them 10 months. The reason I left was because when we were doing the Dakota chair, Siegfried sometimes get too excited or whatever, and he gave the cue, the wrong cue, and I opened a trap door and I fell through.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and I had I dislocated my hip. I was in bad trouble, and I have to go in therapy for 3 months because I didn't want to go under the knife.
Wow. Yeah.
The doctor says it's better if you don't go under the knife because it's going to give you more problems. So Next thing I know, yeah, I work with them. And
now, what did you do then with them? I mean, you obviously weren't doing the Charlie Chaplin thing at that time.
No, no, no. I would do Roy. Did we do
like, the midget
yeah.
Roy, I guess.
Yeah.
Kind of, okay.
And I was covering him up and, you know, so on. And
you know, I think I remember seeing you in that role because I saw the show back in the, ooh, gosh, late 70s, early 80s?
It was 78 when we did that.
Yeah.
So, and we do that, and after I will say to Siegfried, I'm a magician. He goes, what do you mean? I go, yeah. So I create this little dressing room that you pick it up, and in 32 seconds, I dressed up like Chaplin.
Yeah.
And I come out and do my thing, and then I go back, and then I vanish, and then that's when Roy appears in the glass box. And after that, I go, I don't want to do anymore. I want to go away. And so they said, okay. So I moved to Florida, and I was working there when the phone rings one day, and it was the producers of Ring Brothers Barnum and Bailey. And they say, we're looking for Antonio. And I go, he's not here right now. And I go, where is he? I go, he went to the store. Will you call him in 15 minutes? And I hang up.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to see. And the phone rings 15 minutes. Actually, I go, can I speak to Antonio? I go, I'm here. Can I help you? We want to do a TV special for NBC, but they request a little Roy. And I go, I will under one condition that, because unfortunately, me and Siegfried, we didn't get along too well. Because I didn't let him put me down. Because how can I say, for two men doing magic, it was beautiful, but they're very, they were very rude behind the stage to people.
Territorial.
Very territorial, and they think that as you direct as I am superstar, and I go, it ain't going to happen like that, sir. I respect you who you are, but if you think I'm going to bow to you, you're pretty much wrong.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. I go, I guarantee you, I wouldn't do that. You treat me as a human being, I respect you. If it's not, I don't need this.
Yeah.
You know? So when the producers of the Ringling called me, I go, I do under one condition that I don't want a secret secretary to be near me. Every time we have a meeting, I sit with the NBC group people, and you talk to me. And then I also told them, and I think that when I arrive there, and I go to the dressing room, I want Siegfried to pour me a drink, because I used to do that for him. So I reverse, and I go down, I want Siegfried to pour me a drink, and we be very gentle, and I will do my job.
Yeah, be
that,
friends.
Yeah, I did it.
That's cool. Well, I know that they got a ride here waiting, getting ready to go. Antonio, thank you very much. Appreciate your time. And the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. Do you have a magic word? What is your life? What's important in your life? You know,
To me, how can I say? To me, most important in my life, first of all, is my daughter.
Mm-hmm. So family, kind of.
Yeah, but I'm divorced. Yeah. My daughter is my world.
Good.
And after that, just the privilege to entertain people has been wonderful. And that's all I know. I want people to remember me as a fun little person who had a good time in life. That's all.
That's all you can ask for. Thanks, Antonio.
Cheers.
Appreciate it.
Cheers.
For The Magic Word, this is Scotty Adams.
I want to again thank each of the guys who took the time to sit with me behind the microphone and talk about The Illusionist Show. I also found it interesting that though they are billed as the illusionists, they really don't travel with what magicians traditionally think of as illusions, like zigzags, the subtrunk, the origami, and those kinds of big box illusions. But they still more than fill the stage with their wonder and illusion. If you'd like to hear more from Jeff Hobson and Kevin James from previous chats, then you can do a search for their names using the search function on the magicwordpodcast.com website. To keep up with The Magic Word and what's going on and what's coming up, be sure to like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheMagicWordPodcast. I can tell you now that next week we will have another exciting guest, Francis Minotti. And after that, I will be in Italy for FISM, where I will be providing daily updates from the Triennial Championships of Magic. I know that you won't want to miss these podcasts with some of the top magicians in the world today. And to help defray some of my expenses, I will sincerely appreciate your financial support now more than ever. You can donate one time with any amount by sending a donation through PayPal to scottwellsmagic@gmail.com. Or you can pledge your ongoing commitment through patreon.com/themagicword. That's Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. However you choose to support this podcast, and whatever amount you can afford, believe me when I say that everything is sincerely appreciated. And I also sincerely appreciate every one of you for downloading and listening to this podcast. So, until next week, stay well, get booked, and don't lock your keys in the car while it's running. This is Scotty out.